If you haven't had a chance, check out the Jazz Pod Co-op on Twitter. It's a group of podcasts with like-minded people that just want to share their opinions on the jazz. Here's a preview. Mark and Doug Hintze on the twos and threes.
The weird things about dude shots is like my favorite like NBA subcategory of
That definitely gets Mark going for sure.
And like, or they're like the length of their arms affecting something. I'm like, whether they jump off of 1 foot or 2 foot.
Right.
Like,
Emily and McCoy on the Jazzy Gals.
If anything, that video also reminded me like how just a few inches difference it was between us being on one side versus the other. You know, like, well, we all know a few inches can make a difference.
Who, Logan and Jared on hitting the high notes?
I don't even care if they're hurt.
I mean,
or they're,
we're not going to dance on any injuries, but yes.
I can't make any promises. I don't even care if it's a fluke or we cheat. I don't even care.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying, right?
That's what they say.
And Brian and McCade on Home Court Press.
With Boyan, Memphis is really struggling to shoot. So giving Boyan to the Grizzlies and then having the Grizzlies forward our first-round pick onto another team, if you can get Boyan a first-round pick and then get Memphis to throw in a first-round pick in DA and take Boyan, a lot of possibilities open for a guy like John Collins.
What's up, folks? It's another edition. It's Hitting the High Notes, Jazz Talk. It is I am here. You can find me on the Twitterverse at WhoTrustSuperman. That's HUUTRAN Superman. That's WhoTrustSuperman. Twitterverse, IG. We're getting right to it. We are talking Jazz Clippers. This is Hitting the High Notes where we, you know, we take what's going on in Twitter, the Jazz Twitter universe, and we talk about it. And I'm here. I'm, of course, he goes the distance. He's 49 years old. Go to distance 49. What's up, man?
Feeling washed, man. Feeling washed. Feeling very 49 years old, but even though I'm not.
Yeah, it happens. You know, that we all get to that age. Father time comes for all of us. Speaking of father of the pod, he's not father of this pod, but he is the father of many pods. It is the Dragon Squash himself. What's up, Logan?
Just happy to be coming in third, like our boy Quinn Snyder, you know. So I'm just, we got something in common.
Let's touch on it right now. My Coach of the Year was announced. Congratulations to Tom Thibodeau, I guess, a two-time award winner for Coach of the Year. And I know there was a lot of outrage from Jazz fandom. I mean, I am shocked because I thought it was going to go to Monty Williams, who this is actually a pretty close race.
More deserving.
I don't know. Honestly, I mean, both those stories are pretty much the same thing, right? Two franchises that have been really bad lately, and not just last year. I mean, in many years, both those coaches turned them around. And yeah, I mean, that we talked about this last time. Like, to say someone's more deserving is sure. Like, I thought Monty Williams probably was going to win it. But do I think Thibodeau, Williams, or Quinn, any of those three were more deserving than each other? Not really. They all had really good cases, and they all had really good stories. They all had really good narratives. And it's just some. It depends on what story. And Logan, you mentioned this before a few weeks ago. Like, saying Tom Thibodeau's shouldn't be part of the top three is no. He should be part of the top three.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think you hit on it pretty well. I think we talked about it before. I think that all three were deserving candidates. I think any three of them winning would have been fine. I don't think it's like some years where it feels like one was a travesty. You know, I don't feel like either one of them got jobbed too much. I just think that the thing about Quinn Snyder, which you guys know my weird take on it, I just don't want anyone to win if Jerry can't win. But also, it is funny that we can talk about the. We can talk on the Twitterverse and in the world about the Jazz being the deepest roster in the NBA. Well, if that's the case, then is your coach that good? I know that's not true, but what I'm saying is, like, it's just a funny, like, it's a funny juxtaposition that where we can talk about being so deep. Well, if you're so deep, then you're saying the coaching doesn't matter as much. So it's just, again, they all could get it. And I think that the expectation level was just so low for New York. And yeah, New York's got the big market. Yeah, that's, we see this a lot, and it's how the NBA model chooses to work.
And yeah,
so it shouldn't come as a surprise.
I think you tweeted out something like, the Knicks are starting Taj Gibson." So you know, there's a, you know,
it's a pretty rough roster, man. I mean, when you really look at it, it's
Yeah, the roster's
a lot of people would say Monty got CP3, and that's the difference. So they want to give CP3 credit. I don't know. I just that Knicks roster is not good.
Jared,
it's terrible.
You just said him. You didn't think he was deserving. Why did you not think? Tom Thibodeau is deserving of the award?
Well, to me, I think he's the last of the three. I felt like he played his guys almost playoff level minutes in the regular season. Not quite, but he kind of rode Julius Randle pretty hard, and we saw that Randle had basically nothing left. Either that or Thibodeau couldn't scheme for him to get any kind of offense going in the playoffs. And so, the Knicks really just put a very little fight against the Hawks and went out in a very disappointing series. Obviously, the playoffs isn't part of this. It's a regular season award. But to me, the results there kind of are a reflection of my opinion of, with the order. It should have been either Monty, Quinn first, and then probably Thibodeau third. It's just my opinion.
How close was the voting? Like, I've never seen the tallies at all.
I think Thibodeau, he was, 20 points ahead. I want to say Monty got maybe one less first place vote than Thibodeau, but he got 20 or 30 less second place votes, and that was pretty much the difference, I guess.
Because the Jordan Clarkson one turned out to be actually kind of a landslide.
Right, yeah.
Right?
JC won by pretty good, he won by hundreds of points. So over 100 points. So yeah, this one was actually pretty good. It was 20, I want to say it was 360 Thibodeau, 340 Monty Williams. So
it's all right. Thibodeau will be three-time coach of the year before Quinn and Monty get one, so it's not a big deal. It's not a water. It's the least award that matters the least in any professional sports. I mean, there's been multiple guys who won coach of the year and got fired in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean,
it just doesn't even matter.
It doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't. It absolutely doesn't.
Because
you can argue the sixth man of the year means more because those guys seem to stick around a little longer in terms of in the league and stuff.
And coach of the year is player awards, at least there's stats you can look at, all right, points per game, blocks per game, or, just plus minus, stuff like that. There's not really, besides wins, but then again, you don't just give it to the coach that or team that won the most games. And if you're mad about Tom Thibodeau winning this one, then you have to, then you're, how to show it? The Tom Thibodeau winning this one is akin to Hubie Brown winning the year that Jerry Sloan won. So it's the same story. It's the same narrative. So a team that wasn't supposed to go anywhere, got to the playoffs in a tough year, they blew expectations out of water. So, the Jazz had different expectations. I think what happened was the Jazz not getting three or four marquee wins probably hurt them in the long run. The Jazz had, swept the Clippers and won against the Phoenix Suns, didn't get swept by the Wolves and the Wizards. Those four or five wins, made the Jazz look a lot better. It looks like a team that didn't have to play the last week of the season, a team that was so good it ran away. It was first place going into the second half of the season, and it's never looked back. If you thoroughly dominate the rest of the field, that's what voters notice, but.
Is it the same group of people who get to vote on all the awards each offseason, or is it different people for, different report, or they get a ballot? Because what's interesting is the narratives went backwards. Is JC essentially won the Sixth Man of the Year award in the first couple months, and was average to sometimes below average the rest, but it was good enough to keep the award pretty timely foul. But it almost feels like Quinn was punished for being good all season,
I think if we've
been flip-flopped with the Suns and we were making a push at the very end and we would have taken over the number one seed without Don, and it may have been differently, but it almost feels like he was, because we sat there so long, it was a story at first, and it's just interesting if the same people voted on all those, on both sets of awards, if one went with the early season narrative and the other one, it's interesting thought process, but I don't know. I know certain people only get certain votes certain years.
Yeah.
I don't know if they do. Did they get the whole ballot or what?
Yeah, they get the whole ballot.
Okay. I don't know. I assume so, but I have
Zach Lowe kind of talks about the process, and it, It sounds like when you have a vote, you have like votes for the whole thing, like all the awards.
So,
but they rotate who gets to keep it each year, though. Like I heard on the Utah side, it was I don't know who it was, but there's only certain people who get to have them, right?
Yeah, and I think
each year they rotate.
I think it comes to people give it to. Yeah, they choose who they want to give it to in that market for that year. Or whatever.
Just kind of weird though, because it's an inconsistent narrative. But I guess it is what it is. So.
Microphone. There we go.
Who's just a little gassy right now?
Did you guys see Giannis's T-shirt before he got smashed tonight?
Uh-uh.
It was like a little teddy bear who had some underwear on, and he was pulling the underwear away from his hoo-ha and taking a picture of it. And so I was like, what the heck is going on? There's so much going on here.
Hoo-ha. So we had set out to say, hey, we're going to
do. Hey, I said a nice word so that you didn't have to bleep it.
I'm just thinking about it right now. Teddy bear junk.
Anyway, we had set out. We were like, hey, you know, like after every win, let's get on and record. And then I forgot my equipment last win. And then I was like, you know, I'm pretty burnt out. Like I'm, recording every other day was kind of hard. I was like, oh boy.
Yes.
You know, we didn't get to talk about it. The Jazz defeat the Grizzlies in what Logan calls not a gentleman's sweep.
Scoundrel sweep.
Because a gentleman's sweep is, you would think two wins at home. You lose that game three when they get back at home. You know, they win in front of their crowd, and then you win the next two pretty handily. So now we know that the Jazz are playing the LA Clippers, who had a tough matchup against the Dallas Mavericks, excuse me. And the Clippers are coming, you know, they played Sunday, they will play Tuesday in Utah. They played seven games. They're flying into elevation. The Jazz are on rest. The Jazz have had 5 or 6 days of rest, while the Clippers will only have 1 day of rest. And, you know, that means tired legs, elevation. The Jazz should win game one pretty handily, so I hear. Or that was the narrative until, Memphis came in and did the exact opposite of that. Where is your comfort level against playing the Clippers, Jared?
They've got the best player in the series, so, I mean... this is obviously a less desirable matchup than the Mavericks, because we need Rudy to be dominant in this series if we were to have a chance because if he wins that matchup inside and is able to just either keep getting offensive boards and putbacks and dunking and then keeping Zubac from being a factor and not getting played off the run off the court with a small ball lineup of like Morris or something, then I think we're in good shape, honestly.
Logan, I'm
I was gonna ask you about that because I was listening to one of our I believe it was the on our Jazz Pod Co-op. I want to say it was the Home Court Press, but I'm not sure. They were talking about how Rudy in the series against Memphis put to sleep the theory that he can be played off the court in the playoffs. And again, you guys will know this better than I am, because I don't know where this narrative really comes from, but it really, to me, I don't think that a team with Valanciunas is where he's going to get played off the court. When I think of played off the court, I think of a team like a small ball team with Morris, where, in the game we lost, that caused some pretty major challenges when they put Morris at the five and went small. So when I think about played off the court, are they talking about just in the playoffs? Are they talking about these tricky lineups that when they go small? Because my gut instinct was just when a team goes small. So to say that he proved he's not played off the court doesn't. I mean, with Memphis, you're not going to see that. I don't believe it's true, anyways. But I'm just saying it doesn't seem like the right series to be. You'll really find it out more with a small ball lineup or a team that and none of the teams left really do it anymore because you got Jokic and you got Ayton left, but. I don't know. That's my question / thought, I guess.
I'm kind of with on that. I don't feel like not having heard what they said, it's hard to directly comment on what was said. I don't think it's a real true narrative anyways. And I've Zach Lowe talks about it a lot, where he feels like that's an overplayed thing, where people just talk about it. It's a Twitter narrative, in my opinion. You know, people will give this like this take about Rudy getting played off the floor, and it's like most of them didn't even watch any the Jazz series. They just look at the box scores and then look at the end result and say, "Rudy got played off the floor." Or when they did watch us play the Rockets, they were like not really paying attention, because Rudy, the second year versus the Rockets, Rudy was great. And Rudy was not the problem.
So the question is, are you worried that Marcus Morris is going to like be that guy that pulls Rudy out of the paint?
I mean, he might pull Rudy out of the paint, but I don't think that's necessarily a problem for us. Unless Paul George and Kawhi are, you know, going hard to the rim, but I don't really feel like that's going to be as much of a problem, because they're mostly a jump shooting team anyways. But they don't go to the rim that often. So,
but if you take Rudy out, like, so. The Jazz play the drop big, right? And if Rudy has to play more away from the paint, that does give Kawhi and Paul George, because, you know, Kawhi and Paul George are going to get mid-range shots regardless. And then if you give them the lane as well, that is pretty dangerous. Like that, so that's where that fear comes from, right? That, all right, so no Rudy, because like, who's going to stay in front of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard?
Well, I think you have to hope that Rudy can do a little bit of everything, because we saw.
Well, yeah, obviously, but
saw how good he was at recovering from, you know, earlier in the season. We were seeing him recovering and blocking shots and getting in front of guys that you're like, how did he even recover from that?
Yeah,
like even like a year ago or 2 years ago, it looked like he was too far away to get back. So, I mean. I don't know if they're going to play drop coverage. I have no idea what Quinn is planning for.
That's the problem. The fear, I guess, is that, you know, if Marcus Morris is hitting threes, you know, who's going to guard? Who, you know, you got to have Rudy out there guarding him, because there's no one else that you can Rudy on.
I wonder if they'll switch somebody else onto him.
I'm looking at that, or not looking, but I'm thinking about the lineups for the Clippers. So if Marcus Morris is that five for the Clippers, you got Marcus Morris, Kawhi, Paul George, I guess maybe Reggie Jackson, you know, Patrick Beverly,
or Nick Batum.
Did Nick Batum even play?
Or Rondo.
Rondo, yeah, Cornette. So just it's like if you put like Bojan on Marcus Morris, which could work, where does Rudy go at that point? So there's a legit fear that, okay, cool, if the Clippers go five out and pull Rudy out, like, so this goes both ways. The five out has to work for the Clippers if Marcus Morris is hitting threes, which he did in the last couple games against the Mavericks. But on the flip side, you know, if Marcus Morris is your big, and you know, Rudy really needs to be able to grab all the rebounds on both ends of the floor, you know.
And the flip side being that if you put Marcus Morris at the five, which I don't think they'll play the entire game, but it's probably more of in spurts or gimmicky. Because the other part is, I mean, to that side, it opens up a lot for us on the offensive side.
Yep.
I mean, Rudy should be able to carve him up pretty handily. So, I mean, I don't know. Just to be clear. So, I don't believe the narrative is true. I was just curious as to, you know, what surrounded the narrative, because it doesn't seem like that's the game that puts it to rest. It would seem more like if they did play, you know, they did defeat a team going small like that. You could really put it to sleep at that point. So
yeah, hopefully
it's not really more of the important part. The schematic part's the important piece. So it will be interesting to see, because it's all about making adjustments, and those guys are smarter than we are. But like you both said, the whole foundation of our defense, and I think that I'm understanding defense a little more, is that it's all built on the fact that the perimeter guys can kind of suck ass, but they're all funneling to Rudy. And so if you pull him out of the middle, then it just changes the whole defensive fundamental philosophy, right?
That is basically what we've been saying all year about the Jazz defense. So,
not to say Rudy can't go out in moments and guard the perimeter, but for the most part, for the majority of the possessions, you want him just kind of patrolling that area, right? So, I mean, I still don't really know.
Yeah. And I honestly, I feel like five out is... There are very few teams that can really do true five out. And I don't even know if the Clippers can really do it as effectively as, say, like those Warriors teams that did it.
What worries me about the Clippers is that they're one of the two teams that, the Jazz are going to give you some mid-range shots. And those are, you know, them and the Suns. I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah, they can hurt you really badly.
And so, those are... That's I guess where my fear comes from. I mean, the Marcus Morris thing was interesting. I saw people talk about it as soon as the Clippers won, because he had hit a couple. I think, I don't remember who said it. Somebody said, oh, you know, he's hitting threes. That's where the Jazz are probably going to but, you know.
Well, because I think also, too, in the third game we played him, whatever game we played him when we were kind of all full strength, is that was kind of the key stretch is when they kind of put that game away. Right. Morris hit a bunch of threes in a row, so I think it's like some PTSD. But if you can't figure out a way to game plan Mark, whichever Morris he is, I don't even know which one he is. He's the better one, I assume, because he's playing, Mark, right?
Marcus is the better one. Markeith is the off-brand.
Markeith?
Speaking Mark, of...
Markeith is the one that plays for the Lakers.
Hi, I'm McCoy.
Hi, I'm Emily.
And we're the Jazzy Gals. If you're looking for in-depth Utah Jazz basketball analysis, this ain't it.
But if you are looking to discuss how great Rudy's beard looked this week, Jazz Twitter crushes, or other fun pop culture things, you have come to the right place.
That's right, and you can find us wherever you get your podcasts.
And also on Twitter at JazzyGalsPod. Go Jazz!
Go Jazz!
Hey, I'm Mark.
And this is Doug. What's up?
And we're co-hosts of a weekly podcast on the Utah Jazz called Twos and Threes. It's available on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever else you get podcasts on your feed every Monday morning.
Mark's my big brother, and you could say this podcast is a family affair, but really we think of the Jazz and Jazz Nation as our family. So we'd love for you to participate with us, to listen, and really let's do this together. Go Jazz.
Go Jazz. Be our family. Boom.
Speaking of full strength, the Jazz may not be at full strength. You know, Mike Conley is questionable for game one. He's got this like a lingering hamstring issue that's going to be lingering for a while. It's been lingering for a couple years, actually. So what do we do? Man, like, does Mike Conley not playing game one or game two? Does that change your guys' thoughts on how the series? I'm assuming that we all think the Jazz can still beat the Clippers.
Without a healthy Mike Conley, I honestly
I mean, it's going into like today. If your confidence is like, all right, cool, like take the Mike Conley thing out of it for a minute. Like, do you think the Jazz could beat the Clippers in a 7-game series?
Yeah. My prediction that I made on the Spaces with my dude. I guess he goes by Black Magic with a Q. Anyways, my prediction is Jazz and seven, as it stands, even with Conley's health, considering, you know, what it is. So, I think if Conley was healthy, we could maybe win it in six, but it really just depends. I honestly could easily see series getting away from us. So I'm just, it's one that makes me nervous because the clip really
so
good.
I'm just going to recap for everybody. Jared thinks they're either going to win in 7-6 or the Clippers will beat the Jazz. So, Logan, how's
that? You got to put all the bets out there.
Right.
My true bet is Jazz in 7. But I can, obviously, you never know what's going to happen.
I know. Thank you.
I don't think that Connolly plays game one. In some weird way, I think we've kind of found a way to kind of hold it together a little bit going back to last year to be without him for a game or two.
This is what we have Bojan for.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. So, I mean, I think we have to have him.
I think his lack of play, I think we don't have playmaking without him. We have less playmaking.
Yeah, no, it's definitely troublesome. And I don't think the Jazz win game one anyways. I think the Jazz win in six, but I don't think they win game one. I think the Clippers ride the mojo and momentum of a game seven victory for at least a game. I also know Connolly is not great. And the thing I'm learning as I try to understand how things work by besides just staring blankly at a game and trying to figure out is the word on the street is the Jazz offense is a rhythm offense. And when they don't play, they get rusty and things don't look well. I think we saw a lot of that in game one before. So I think it's the perfect storm to drop game one. Everything melt down in true hellacious fashion. But I still think the Jazz get it in six. I could see the Jazz winning two in a row two times and the Clippers getting one in between.
Yeah.
Just don't go up 3-1.
Don't go up 3-1.
At all costs, don't go up 3-1.
I was trying to make a point on Twitter the other day and just could not get the right words out. So I was trying to, because it was after game 6, everybody's like, okay, we want that, you know, for me, that having the Jazz win Sunday afternoon would have made things a lot easier for me personally. But also was like, as a Jazz fan, I'm like, oh boy, maybe 2 more days for Conley helps, because if the Jazz were going to keep Conley out past Tuesday anyway, he would have missed game 1 and 2 against the Mavericks. And then Saturday, they would have game 3. So now it's game 2. He might be ready for game 2. Like, we're kind of assuming that he won't be ready for game 1, but we don't know. We're not quite sure yet, so we're just
gonna I think the rest is like a weird two-edged sword. I think because of the age of some of our dudes and the injury concerns, especially with two of them later in the season with Conley and Mitchell, that I think the days off in the long run over the series and playoff run are good for them, but I think they really get hurt in game 1. I mean, game 1 looked rough, you know, and then 6 days off right. With no one playing. They always seem to come out, like out of breaks, they seem to come out just a little funky at first offensively, you know, yeah. So I don't...
Yeah, I know what you mean.
They lose every game 1 forever. As long as they keep winning the series, I don't care. But it's just a weird,
like, game 1 of the
people will melt down. I mean, they absolutely right. will.
The, yeah, 100% agree with that.
Game 1 of the Grizzlies and Jazz series really hurt my confidence about this Jazz team overall, and I'm still like recovering from that game 1. It was like a 3-point loss, but I was like, it didn't feel like a 3-point loss. It felt like the Jazz were down that whole game, and the Jazz like threw that game away right from the tip off. And maybe the whole like remember, like, there was a real weird situation with Donovan, and it was weird for us fans, and maybe it was just so weird for the Jazz like team that just threw them off that night, because they did come out and they won 4 in a row, won twice in Memphis, you know, stepped on the neck in game 5. And so I don't know, maybe it was just the Donovan thing. I don't know. But, I was trying to make that joke earlier that, you know, we've seen this story before where the Jazz have rest, an opponent comes in. Like, the opponent should be tired, but then the Jazz, the one that comes out, lackadaisical. And, you know, the Clippers are not the Grizzlies. The Clippers are a veteran team, and so this is going to be a tough one.
I think you can't discount. I mean, you can't discount Donovan being out of game 1. I get that, but I think that, like, if I think from my perspective, watching the whole body language of the entire team, and there could be something to what we've heard too. Possibly there was like a last second, you know, just kind of threw all of them off because I was in there too. But just it's kind of a repeating pattern with them, the Jazz. Like, when they come, when either the whole team comes off of a break or a player comes back from a break, they just look. It looks rusty. Like, it just doesn't look as fluid as it normally does. And I'm sure it's just, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see how they play. Because the Clippers, I mean, we kind of went back and forth with the first round about the possibility of Golden State and the disrespect that took place there. But the weird disrespect for the Clippers is bizarre to me. Just from people being wild, but like people who normally like try to put together at least decent semblances of thoughtful production out there. But like, I made my smart ass comment about if they win in 5 and you're calling it now, I'll send you, you know, money or pictures. But that wasn't meant to be, like a compliment. I'm not thinking they can win in 5. That's like, I get the team has got a lot of veteran pieces and they're not going to just roll over. And the advantages I find interesting, and I could be just totally roasted for this, and I get it, but like, immediately the coaching advantage goes to Quinn Snyder. But like, let's not forget that Tyronn Lue has a championship. I get how he got it, but he still got one.
Right.
Yeah, and honestly, like, if I don't know,
Kawhi's got 3? 2?
He's got 2 so far.
Yeah, I mean,
including 2 finals MVPs.
Yeah, and the Paul George thing is, you know, historically he's struggled. I still like have a hard time just counting on that to be the case all the time. It still makes me nervous. He may retire and it still may be his narrative forever. I don't know, but I still don't feel comfortable with it. Like, it still makes me nervous. Right. And even then, it's just, you know, Kawhi alone is good enough for 2 games.
Like, here's what the playoff thing, like, Pete, hey, is like, if you're gonna leave somebody open on the offense, you're not gonna leave Paul George open. Like, you're not gonna be like, oh, playoff Paul George. We'll leave him open. No. So.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to echo what Logan said. You got to give Kawhi like 2 games because Kawhi is just, he's Kawhi, man. I mean.
Oh, I'm not. I'm gonna give them 1 game. So.
You're gonna say Jazz in 5, really?
I said Jazz in 5. So,
for your dork.
I believe it. I believe this Jazz team. All right, they're gonna let me down again. So.
you're freaking lying.
No, I said I believe in the Jazz to beat the Grizzlies.
You said you're trying to recover from one of the Grizzlies, and now you're saying Jazz.
And they let me down there. So you know, let me get hurt again. You know, I don't feel good about the Grizzlies win because they won 5. You know, bunch of idiots. All right. So
he's still so distraught over that Grizzlies.
Right. The first one's, you know, bunch of losers there. I almost like went to a different fandom there. All right. So real quick. Dame getting out of the playoffs, Luka getting out of the playoffs. Logan's been really beating this drum on Twitter here. Because like there's the thing, like, you know, like number one, I'm a Weber State graduate. I'm Logan here. Does not want Dame to get more help. He's this is a funny thing because like people like Dame, people like Luka. You know, Dame has this local
Weber State, great.
Yeah, local connection. Logan, you may, as a Jazz fan, you make a really good point here.
It's weird, man. Like it's weird. Like why? Like if Dame or Luka want to get help and go to the other conference, that's cool. Or they want to come to the Jazz and get help. But like, why would you want teams like Luka is going to make the Jazz life a living hell for the next like 10 years. Like, why are you like hoping he quickly gets more help? That's like the most ridiculous thing ever. It's like saying I wish that Jordan or LeBron would just get a Kevin Durant or a. Like just a better sidekick.
I sure hope Kawhi Leonard goes to John Moran.
More cutting and more relevant to Jazz fandom, that you know the younger fans that don't remember Jordan. Harden getting Chris Paul. I mean, that hurt the Jazz.
I love Dame, but like, why would you want your even more than your Western Conference, your division rival to get better? Like, that's fine. Like, want help, but I'm all for the get him out. Like, if you want to get him out, let him get out. But, like, why would you, as a Jazz fan, why do you want these guys to get better?
Jazz fans want their kick.
Why do you want
too?
The West to be better? The Jazz that's want, just weird. It's weird.
Well, there's still a Dame the Utah pipe dream going on somewhere. So,
what's that one I'm fine with? But, like, they really just, like, they want help for both of them. And it's like,
yeah, the Jazz fans are mother. Like, we want the Jazz to be better than Dame and Luka and them, but we want Luka and Dame to come second and third. We want them to feel pretty good about coming in second and third to the Jazz, though. So, that's
yes. Exactly.
We want them to like be demoralized. It's like when the Niners almost beat Patrick Mahomes. Like this is going to be it. Like and they just hold on. Patrick's going to be mentally screwed for the rest of his life. Andy Reid's already got that psychological block.
I knew that game was over as soon as Jimmy missed that pass. It's over.
you don't want these dudes to get better. Yeah, like why?
Like, because like the Jazz right now with Jazz being as good as they are. It's hard to remember, like, you know, back in the 90s and, you know, whenever the Jazz have hard rivals, like, we forget the West is always going to be hard. You know, the West is hard now. It's not going to get any
better.
Dude,
next year seems like it's going to be even worse. Like,
yeah. And so, like I'm
talking with today, who's, you know, he's a Twitter mutual follower. And yeah, I'm like, man, he was talking about 6 teams that have championship aspirations, and I'm like, yeah, you're right. It's gonna be ugly.
Yeah, and that's every year. And so now, like when I see Logan like talking about this, like it's really funny because, you know, I'm like, yeah, I don't want Luka to get better. I don't want Dame to get better. Like him, or like you know, to get help. Yeah, especially with small market teams, it's just you know, it's like yeah, you know, like you know, it's hard. I mean, I don't want the Lakers to get better because like they play by a different set of rules, right? And part of it is like we cheer for these small market teams because we want small market teams to get better, and that's the whole conversation for another time. But I want Logan to get on that rant.
I don't care if small market teams get better either. I'm a Jazz fan. Like I don't care either. Like it doesn't matter to me. Like I really don't care. And that's I think that's interesting about the NBA. It's kind of it's kind of this weird process where we complain about the NBA, but it's also kind of working because the NBA is a superstar league. So like in football, you wouldn't be like, you know what, man, I just really wish that Aaron Rodgers would go to my division rival. Like, you don't do that. I just really wish that Mike Trout would just come to my division. Like, well, they don't do that. It's a basketball thing. So while we complain about the way the NBA markets themselves, they've actually like done it well because now you're cheering for superstars to get help in your own division and make your path harder.
Yeah,
like it's weird, man. Like I just, yeah, Dallas is not exactly a small market either, though. So,
exactly. I mean, I am. I put everybody like, you know, there's five big market NBA teams and then there's 25 small market teams. That's just how I look at it. Jared, as you finish our, I think I don't know if Logan has one more rant, so I'm gonna give him a minute to get his rant notes ready if he has one. But Jay Bark, all right, so Clippers in Jazz in seven or Clippers in five or Jazz in six.
You said Clippers in five?
No.
What are you really worried about the Jazz and the Clippers? Oh. Like if the Clippers are going to beat the Jazz, what's going to happen to the Jazz besides, like, you know, they're just not shooting threes well or something?
What's going to happen is they would probably end up stealing home court from us.
But, like, I mean, but why? Like, what are they going to, how are they going to do that? How are they going to take,
So what happens is they keep running Kawhi like he was running the last of last series. He's, you know, he's scoring in the 40 or so. And then Paul, if playoff P has any kind of 15-point games, that's probably going to be enough. And then Terrence Mann scoring on Bojan would probably do it.
What's going on here? All right.
Are you rewinding a VHS tape?
Yes. Logan, if you have another rant, go for it. If you don't have another rant, I'm going to tell you, you know, how are the Clippers going to beat the Jazz in the series besides, you know, the Jazz just sucking from three?
Yeah, I don't have any more rants. That was it. Just don't be stupid. If you're a Jazz fan, be a Jazz fan. Don't be a dumbass. How are they going to – I don't know. I really don't know how teams win. Like, I don't know. All of a sudden, like, the game starts, I see things moving, and the end of the game, like, sometimes we have more points than sometimes they do. And I really don't know how it happens. Like, I don't have any real analysis as to how it all takes place. I just think the Jazz are just deeper. I just think they've got more options and more weapons. And yeah, I think that the thing I'm starting to really come around on is the old Jazz part of us all wants to just be convinced that the sky is always going to fall. But I think it's going to be hard for us to lose to have in a 7-game stretch to have four really bad shooting nights. It just hasn't happened. And so, you know, when the offense, I think they showed us in the last round that it's all going to be about the offense. So,
this is a Clippers team that in the first quarter of game three, everybody was like, well, you know, this team's blown up. They were down by 19 points in the first quarter, and everybody was like, oh, well, this team's over. And well, they came back and won seven games, or to win and get in seven games. So
yeah, I didn't watch much of the series. So I don't really know how it happened. I don't know how they got back in, but they were on the ropes, man. Yeah. So
that's, they're different Clippers, though. They've got a lot more mental toughness than last year.
So, yeah. So I'm hopefully playoff P. Hopefully the rest helped Joe Ingles. Like maybe we'll see Joe Ingles in the series. Who knows? And then let's. I think Tiffany Dodd put out a summoning circle for Mike's hamstring. So. You know, a lot of things to digest here. Maybe we'll be back tomorrow night talking about if the Jazz win. Maybe we'll talk about them. If not, we'll wait till Thursday night.
Before we sign off, let me do some shout-outs, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Well, shout-out to Z-Blocks, Z-B-L-O-X, because without him, I would not have known about the Yum Yum Asian food truck. And I don't know if you guys saw that post, but it's kind of been all over the internet. But they apparently have Filipino food. They're out of Layton. The truck was vandalized. You know, some hate crime crap going on. And I feel like I need to seek this truck out now because, you know, I love Filipino food already. So that's just another reason to, you know, give these folks business because, you know, show them what Utah really is about, not this ugly, you know, underbelly that keeps showing up for some reason. Anyways, shout out to YFan Girl J for setting up that watch party that I went to for, I don't know, was that game five? No, it was game four. of the Grizzly series. Apparently got sponsored by Hee Hee Streams. So we're going to tag Hee Hee Streams in this tweet. Hope it gets a lot of interactions because maybe they'll sponsor us and send us money just like they sent money to pay for the food for that for that get together. Shout out to Parker Bushnell, who, sorry, he does a hoop run on Saturdays, guys. A lot of fun. And he also has an affiliation with the Jazz. So, and last but not least, I am a lucky person who is going to game one tomorrow. And shout out to my guy, G_had13, because we're gonna, you know, we're gonna have a little mandate.
What?
You don't know what mandate is?
That's worse. No, you gotta go with him. Like, if there's a top three people on Twitter who I love and who never irritate me, he's one of the three.
He's amazing. I love that guy.
His brother's the other one. So there's two of the three. So I'll let the rest of the world figure out who the other one is. But
all right then. Well, guys, hopefully we record again tomorrow, or you know, when people hear this tonight, and hopefully it's a game one win. Jazz and five. All right, that's it. We'll see you guys next time.
Peace.
We never see them. That's just why we've never seen them.
I know. It's an ironic thing to say for a podcast. It's like it's taking 102 episodes for someone to call that out.